The Union Prayer Book, the book which we have handled often at these services in the life of the temple, was first published in 1895. During the subsequent 82 years, it was reshaped. There were additions. There was a revised edition, a newly revised edition. And the book with which we are most recently familiar was introduced in 1940, a full generation ago. The temple began to use the Union Prayer Book the year after it was published, in 1896. It's a book with which we are familiar and most of us are comfortable. I enjoy it. I have often been moved by worship which has been shaped around it. For prayer book is not worship, but it provides the skeleton around which the music, the song, the congregation, your own feelings weave the magic of the worship hour. But the very achievement of the Union Prayer Book is, in some people's minds, its defect. There's an old rabbinic statement, Ein Aliyah Bli Yerida, there's no success without a concomitant failure. And for as many of us who are satisfied with the security of the familiar, there are also those who look upon the familiar as humdrum and routine and banal, and who want always something new. This is especially true in our day and age, when the new is often celebrated. There has to be a new sound, there have to be new styles, there has to be a new school of painting. There's a certain virtue in some people's minds simply in breaking old forms, and breaking out of the familiar rules. And those who break the forms simply by that act, though they may simply be destructive, gain a certain popularity. We celebrate the new, so much so that we have created what are called happenings, extemporaneous outbreaks of spontaneity, art without necessarily having preconceived talent or skill or rules or traditions. I'm often asked, and every rabbi is asked, you know, Rabbi, why is it that we keep saying the same formulae, the same sentences, week after week, month after month? Isn't that routine? And the answer is that the purpose of worship is, to a very large degree, the repetition of the familiar. We are here because it allows us to draw back from out there. Out there is change, out there is confusion. Out there are 100 different isms and ideologies and sets of values and political claims which are competing for our attention and our submission. We're tired out and exhausted mentally and intellectually by the world out there, and we need a place where we can come and touch the timeless values, the eternal verities, the things which give balance and a sense of direction and a sense of confidence to our lives. And so the prayer book has celebrated to a large degree the traditional. And yet we have, as we did this morning, there is change. The prayer book has always been a loose leaf book, an open book. Since it was first organized, every generation of Jews has added to the contents or subtracted from it. The reform, the renewal, the revision, the reshaping of a prayer book is not a unique activity of liberal Judaism. There are rabbinic things in the prayer book. There are Kabbalistic materials in the prayer book. There are Hasidic materials in the prayer book. There are materials which come from the philosophic tradition of the Middle Ages, and there are materials which are drawn from the concerns and the songs of our time, from the songs which have to do with the Holocaust and the establishment of Israel. If the purpose of the revision, the reshaping, the reprinting of the prayer book had simply been change for change's sake, I would have been opposed to it. Because the emphasis on the new is self-defeating in liturgical matters. Over the last 30 years, I've been very unhappy with a word which I pick up here and there and to a certain degree everywhere in our liberal tradition, in American Judaism. I see congregations organizing what they call creative worship. And what they really mean was that they were organizing an original worship service. There can be original liturgy, poetry, song, which is drawn together on a special theme and for a special occasion. But creative worship is everyday worship. The creativity of worship is what we bring to the worship hour. Worship is an art. It's like the art of listening to good music or the art of enjoying and understanding a great painting. It takes a certain amount of preparation. The more familiar you are with the history of the piece of art, the history of music, the form, the architecture of music, the more informed you are about the history of art and the history of a particular artist, the more a particular object or a particular sound symphony can mean to you. And the same is true of worship. Many times we come to worship and it's as if we were not there. Other times we come and we are sensitive, we are aware. Suddenly a phrase, an idea, a melody picks us up. Worship is creative always if we bring a certain amount of energy and a search our own needs to the worship service. And that's the true measure of creativity. If we had changed the prayer book simply to be original, it would be a self-defeating undertaking, because though these words sound new to us now and fresh, how long will they be fresh and new? They'll soon become as familiar to us as the language of the older book, and the language of the books that went before. Why then do we have a new Union prayer book? Now there are some who argue that we have a new Union prayer book because of the old-fashioned archaic English of the old, all those these and thous and ths and didsts. And of course that's no longer our language, but to a certain degree the archaic has a very compelling flavor to it. Somehow when we have guests at our table, we like to put out the old and the beautiful china and the old and the beautiful glassware. Some argue that much of the language of the old was anachronistic. It had metaphors which were drawn from the past, you know, which was no longer relevant. Remember the prayer which appears in the Sabbath ritual? Now the daily tasks are set aside and the brightness of the fireside shines forth to tell that a divine spirit of love holds sway. Well, how many of us sit around every night around the fireside? But I don't think that's the real reason that we have a change. There were some who argued that much of the language of the prayer book was sexist. God of our fathers, what about the mothers? But that's a relatively new pressure in our tradition. There are some who felt that the prayer book was simply too formal. It had a set of stage directions which set the congregation apart from the choir, the chorus, and from those who led the service. There were those rubrics: reader, choir, congregation. They were like a set of stage directions. You only had a very limited part in the worship because your part was designated, and it was felt a barrier, just textually a barrier to the recognition that the whole of the service is yours, is ours. This is a moment that we share. All these, of course, have a certain relevance to the pressures to create a new Union prayer book. But I would suggest to you that the real reason that we have a new book has to do with the new role that worship plays in our lives. And I'd like to make this point by drawing an historic analogy between the editing of this prayer book, which is a radically new revision or reshaping of what has been before, and the original Union prayer book, which was the first trans-congregational prayer book enjoyed by Reformed Judaism in America. Between 1850 and 1895, there was a rich flowering of liturgical writing in these United States. It had a very pragmatic purpose. When our congregation was founded in 1850, we were a traditional congregation. And when those who wanted to organize worship needed a book around which to organize the worship, they simply went out and they found a few old siddurim, some old worship books, and they used these. The temple began very early to move away from traditionalism towards liberalism. There were those who wanted some vernacular prayers, not simply the Hebrew. There were those who felt that they had to cut down the worship service, that they couldn't use the whole three and a half hours of Sabbath morning worship. There were those who argued with a particular prayer or paragraph, the paragraph having to do, for instance, asking God for the reintroduction of the sacrificial cult. All of the pressures which led to liberal Judaism were very quickly at work. And now a question arises. What should the temple, circa 1860, as it begins this movement into a liberal religious posture, use as a worship book? For a while, they were satisfied to send back to Germany. And we use the Gebetbuch das Reformgemeinde in Berlin, the Reform prayer book that was used, had been just developed by the congregation in Berlin. But there, the other side of the page was in German, and there the prayer for the well-being of those who managed the government asked for the well-being of the Kaiser, and the service was to a certain degree formal, Germanic. It didn't fit into the needs of this congregation or most other American liberal congregations for very long. And so the congregations, or in that generation, most especially the rabbis, began to edit and to print their own prayer books. And there were perhaps 24 liberal prayer books published between 1870 and 1890. All of them were interesting. Some were more learned than others. Some were better written than others. But all of them reflected the needs of the times. But there was another need. And that was the need for us to be in Rochester or in Cleveland or in Atlanta and to essentially feel that we were at home. We were among those who shared our concerns. There needed to be a kind of national movement. And a national movement could come into being only if there was a certain kind of familiarity between the congregations, which meant that there had to be a single book of worship. And the word union in Union Prayer Book was chosen deliberately for that purpose, to signal that this was to be the book which would synthesize the best of all the creativity which had existed before and which would provide a focus around which liberal Judaism could shape its worship in the United States. And in that sense, the Union Prayer Book has been a remarkably successful document. I would guess that by 1940, 1950, 80 to 90% of the liberal congregations used the Union Prayer Book. Now, after the Second World War, in the last generation, as you went around from congregation to congregation for visiting or for whatever purpose, more often than not, when you came into the congregation, you were not handed the old familiar Union Prayer Book, but you were handed a Xerox copy or a mimeograph copy of some so-called original service. It was more original or less original, but the point was that there was a feeling grew among the liberal congregations that this book was somehow not adequate, not fully expressive of our needs. And when I would go out on a Friday night to one congregation or another to join them in their service, more often than not, I would find inside the back cover pasted a little set of mimeographed hymns, because now we were in an era now of song, and there was a desire to do more than was made available through the pages of this book. And when we went out to a retreat or an institute or a camp weekend, we found that the old Union Prayer Book didn't provide for us a Havdalah service, the very beautiful service which separates the Sabbath from the weekday. And when I wanted to organize a Selichot service here at the temple, that meaningful late evening service on the Sabbath before the high holidays, a service of preparation for the high holidays, there simply was none. I had to write one for this congregation. What was simply happened in Reform Judaism in the decades immediately past is that Reform shifted from a movement which had been concerned simply with the righteous life, with ethics, with the stern, strict, prophetic demands of our tradition, as far as family and as far as community are concerned, to a concern also with the religious life. Before the Second World War, we called Reform Judaism often prophetic Judaism. And by that we meant not simply that, as in the words of the service this morning, that we had a mission to help the world, to help ourselves lead the communities towards a better, more liberal, more just social order, that we were to be a light to the nations. But we also used the word prophetic because the prophets had great qualms about the organization of worship and about worship itself. When you come to appear before me, Isaiah says to those who go to the temple in his day, when you come to appear before me, who has required this at your hands to trample my courts? The prophets were people of action who were concerned with the law of righteousness. There's very little concern with the religious life implicit in the prophetic text. And that was very much the way of our fathers and grandfathers in the Reformed congregation. The mystical, the ceremonial, the customary. These values simply did not have great meaning for them, raised as they were in an age where reason was going to become triumphant, where through social action there would be political reform, and soon a new age would emerge, an age where all the old problems of mankind would have been solved. But after the Second World War, after the Holocaust, after the tragedies of our century, we began to realize that we needed religion both as an encouragement, as a spiritual exercise and a spiritual moment. And there was greater interest in song and in prayer and in custom and in ceremony. And this book was simply too meager. It was simply too thin. And that's why there was this rash of original services, of extra services. And that's why this book is so heavy and so weighted. Look at the difference. 800 pages, 400 pages. This book weighs a quarter of a pound. I measured it, I weighed it the other night. It's 800 pages of liturgy around which to shape worship. Its basic purpose was simply to provide for us for the new needs, the new religious needs, which we were beginning to express, to show in a whole variety of ways. If you went to services 40 years ago on a Friday night or a Sunday morning, you were likely to find that the worship occupied 15 to 20 minutes. It was brief and simple and to the point. And then there was likely to be a 40 or 45 or 55 minute lecture, because that was the heart of the worship. It was didactic, it was informative, it dealt with the problems of the day. If you go of a Friday night to worship now, you're likely to find that the sermon lasts for 15 minutes and the liturgy lasts for 45 or 50. The shift is a very radical one and a very revealing one in terms of our needs. And the shift is reflected in the size and the weight of these two books. There's much more in the New Union Prayer Book than there is in this older version. And size, of course, brings with it its own set of difficulties. This book is too heavy, literally. It's too heavy, particularly if your hands have trouble holding, they're a bit arthritic. The book requires too many directions. There's so much here that you're constantly shifting about. I tried to find a service this morning which had a minimum of shifting. But there's so many beginnings and middles and ends that in order to use all of the things which are here, you really need the kind of bulletin board you used to have in the old New England churches, which would list the hymn numbers and the service numbers in back of the preacher, so that you didn't have to continually to be announcing, we will now go to page 612 and a half. There is no accomplishment without its intended, you know, problems. There is variety, there is beauty, there is possibility in this prayer book. We all are going to have to find the way to use it and to use it effectively. So there was, again, a period of great spiritual creativity. We were reflecting a new need. In order that our movement not run away with itself, in order that we be able to move from place to place and feel relatively familiar, there was a need to draw together the best of what had been written, to draw together the new services for Havdalah or Yom HaAtzma'ut, the day which commemorates the establishment of the State of Israel, or Yom HaShoah, the celebration which has to do with the memorialization of the martyrs of the Holocaust. And to bring them all together, the best of it, in a very well-edited book, and that's the New Union Prayer Book, what has been attempted here. The language, of course, has been updated. Many of the specific paragraphs have been refashioned to in line with modern Hebrew or in line with the tradition, changes which we have undone or decided to do again. But essentially, this is to provide us with a new tie of worship between ourselves and all other liberal congregations for the next years. Now, there's another purpose that's expressed through this New Union Prayer Book. In the old prayer book, several of the sections of the service had a title, the adoration, the reading of the Torah, but many did not. And Jewish worship has always had a familiar skeleton, whether it was traditional or liberal. There was always you may have noticed the titles in this book as we went through it this morning, the Shema Uvirkotecha, the Shema, the Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, and the blessings which precede and succeed, the saying of the creed. There's always been what's called a tefillah, which is the heart, traditional heart of the worship, which on the Sabbath is a series of seven benedictions. During the weekday, it's a slightly larger group of 19 benedictions, which are express the basic, our praise of God and the basic needs of the community from God for knowledge, for redemption, and so on. When there is a reading of Scripture, there's a Kriyat HaTorah, the reading of Scripture. There's the Aleinu, the adoration, the summing up of the themes of worship, and there is the Kaddish. And these basic elements appear in all worship, traditional or liberal. But in the old Union Prayer Book, it was hard to know where the Shema began and where it ended. There was no indication of the tefillah, of the central group of benedictions and petitions. And there was no way, either in terms of our actions or in terms of the type, to suggest that we had moved from one moment in the service to another, though many of the familiar prayers were still there. This morning, you did something that we've, as a congregation, never done before. And that is, when the tefillah label appeared in the book, I had you rise for the first three blessings of this central group, because the tefillah is said standing by the traditional congregations. It is said once and then said a second time. It's a long process of standing in the traditional service. And about 100 years ago, a number of the European congregations began to try and signal that they shared the sense of the tefillah, if not the entire text, with their traditional brethren, by standing at least for the first three of these blessings. We've always stood for the Sanctus, for the Kedusha, and now this prayer book suggests that we stand as congregants for the first three benedictions of the tefillah. And what is suggested here is something we've, all of us have felt, that the ties between Jews are closer and must be closer than they've been before, that we are not a separate group within Judaism, but there's Kalal Yisrael, the wholeness of the Jewish people. And in a time when our people are beleaguered and pressured from outside, it's a good time to signal that we are part of one group and not a separatist group within the whole. There are many beautiful things in this New Union Prayer Book, and there's some awkwardness to it. And I have, however, structurally only one great reservation about it. And that's the very title that appears on the back, the New Union Prayer Book. I made a plea some years ago that we not use the words Union Prayer Book, and that we not call this a prayer book at all. The idea of a prayer book, I suggest, is a borrowing from the Episcopalians, from the Book of Common Prayer. And my problem is in the word prayer. What we do here on a Sunday morning, what we do on the Sabbath, on Friday night, is not prayer. It is worship. Prayer is entreaty. It's petition. You plead when you pray. Prayer is the half-formed words of the overheated heart. Prayer is the entreaty of which we express to God in need, or the gratitude we somehow instinctively express to God when we are grateful. You don't need to organize prayer. You can't schedule prayer. And many a person says to me, Rabbi, I don't need the 10:30 hour on a Sunday morning to pray to God. I can pray to God anywhere at any time. And of course, he's right. You can. You do. What we have here is worship. It is a moment to be within the geography of the Jewish soul, the geography of the Jewish world. What we have here is artifice, in the highest sense of the word. It is sculpted. It is fashioned. It represents a creation of the Jewish genius. It is not a happening, except as we make it happen for us. It is sculpted, deliberately so. Worship is spontaneous. I mean, prayer is spontaneous. And worship is an art. It's a great canvas. It's a great symphony. It's a great moment which represents a synthesis of the genius of the Jewish spiritual tradition. And so it must be. And it's interesting that our fathers knew this better than we do. They called their book of worship a siddur, simply the organization of prayer. The word prayer never appears. When the early reformers began to write worship books, they didn't call them books of common prayer or the Union Prayer Book. David Einhorn, who was the most radical of the reformers in America, one of the most brilliant liturgists in 19th century America, called his book of worship Olat Tamid, the eternal sacrifice, the eternal offering. Isaac Mayer Wise, who did so much to create the institutions of liberal Judaism, called his worship book Minhag America, simply the customs of America, the customs of American Jews. Our English brothers, when they began to edit a new worship book about 10 years ago, called theirs Avodat HaLev, the service of the heart. And then we came along with the New Union Prayer Book. Well, someday they'll listen. And I won this far, that we also have a Hebrew title to this new worship book, which is called Sha'arei Tefillah, the gates of Tefillah, or the gates of prayer. At least it suggests that worship is the platform from which prayer springs, and that's of course true. We often truly pray and meditate during a worship service. But I would have wished that we had found some more imaginative title for this worship book, because I think it would have helped us as we develop the ways of using it meaningfully in for public worship and in our lives. A final word. How do we propose to use this new worship book here at the temple? There's an old rabbinic statement with which I agree. Take hold of this and do not leave go of that. This book has great beauty and great meaning. The problem with it is not only that it is thin, but that it will now never be revised, that they will never add to it. In time, this book will be revised and some of the awkwardness will disappear from it. We're going to use this, both books, at our Kabbalat Shabbat service, the chapel service, the temple on Fridays. Sabbath morning, we will use, for the most part, this traditional book. Here, Sunday mornings, we're going to mix the two books. Take hold of this and do not leave hold of that. The virtue of this book is in its variety, that it allows us to do more things. And so when on various occasions we read from the Torah, or on various occasions we celebrate Purim or Hanukkah or another of the festivals, we will turn to this book, which provides us more of the music and more of the traditional customs associated with these moments. And I hope we will come to some effective way of blending the two and balancing the two, and we will somehow find our way towards the use of this new book. It's not going to be easy. As you heard this morning, once or twice I slipped back into the these and the thous and the language of the old prayer book. I had troubles, all of us did, when we turned from Ashkenazic Hebrew to Sephardic Hebrew. We kept slipping back into the familiar, and I created a new language which I called Ashko Sephard. Well, I hope we don't create a new language because the language of this new book of worship is quite beautiful in many ways. But I would welcome your suggestions, your feelings about it, how it can be used most effectively. And I hope that in the weeks and months ahead, all of us will find beauty and meaning and value in its texts. The material is here to be used, to be mined. It can be used with beauty. Whether or not we succeed in doing so is a challenge that we must face. Amen.